The E-Commerce Uncovered podcast is a behind-the-scenes look at what makes e-commerce a success in today's ever-growing and continually changing online world. The podcasts look to uncover the secrets of e-commerce success so you can learn and apply to your own online business. Brought to you by the co-founders of Core Fulfillment, one of the UK's leading e-commerce fulfillment providers, Paul Burns and Jeremy Vernon.
Hi, Jeremy Vernon here, and welcome to episode number 11 of E-Commerce Uncovered. For this week's podcast, I'm very pleased to welcome Chloe Thomas, the founder of E-Commerce Master Plan. Chloe is a best-selling author, international keynote speaker, and host of E-Commerce Master Plan podcast, all of which are built on her expertise and experience in e-commerce strategy and marketing. Across her career, Chloe has seen many businesses that have struggled to get to grips with e-commerce. In response, she crafted the E-Commerce Master Plan to help companies plan, develop, and grow a successful e-commerce business whilst avoiding the pitfalls along the way. So I really hope you enjoy this. I enjoyed interviewing Chloe, touched on the podcast, we touched on the books that she's written, and there's some great tips and everything else for e-commerce retailers that are struggling to generate traffic, generate customers, and ultimately getting repeat customers, which we delve into a little bit deeper during our conversation. So all remains for me to do is welcome Chloe Thomas to the podcast. Chloe Thomas, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
No, absolute pleasure. Before we sort of kick off into more of the marketing side of things I want to talk about, it would be very rude of me not to talk about your podcast, E-Commerce Master Plan. Mm-hmm. Now, this is one of the reasons I've got into podcasting is because I found your podcast.
Oh,
I got
really?
Interested in it. Cool. Oh, yes, yes. So this is part of the inspiration for me to do what I'm doing now. So, one, thank you for that.
I know. Thank you for being inspired.
Can you tell me a little bit about your journey, just specifically with the podcast?
With the podcast. Okay. So my podcast's been going for about 3 and a bit years now. So it's been going for quite a while. Although it feels like only yesterday. It was created because I was doing a series of talks around the Southwest with the government exporting. They were called something then, they're called something else now. The guys who want you to export and sell your products overseas. I was doing it like a roadshow. And one of the guys there was covering social media. And every single time he spoke, he talked about podcasts and how they were going to be huge. So I kind of grabbed him one lunchtime and we ignored all the delegates, which was very naughty of us. And we talked about it and he explained what it all was. Gave me a couple of people to listen to, got listening to them, kind of realised that scratching the skin of the world of podcasting, this was a really powerful way to get your message out. Being a podcast host is heavily about being organised, and I love organising things, so that kind of suited me as well. And for a long time I'd known that I'm very privileged to have some very awesome conversations with e-commerce business owners, but off the record. So I'd forever be talking to a client going, there's this thing that someone's done who does something similar to you, and what they've done is this, and I can't tell you the numbers or who they are, but it worked really well. And it was like, this is ridiculous. No one's being served well by this apart from me and the person I'm speaking to. So it was kind of like, I have the right skill set to be a great podcast host. She says in retrospect, a reasonable podcast host, I thought at the time. But then on the flip side of that was, or not even on the flip side, but the other side of it was I could get these conversations to happen in the public domain. And therefore, A, lots more people could listen to them, and B, I could then actually tell people about them and not say, this person who might do something that's vaguely similar to you. So it all kind of came together rather nicely. Now, getting people to come on the podcast and talk initially, that was a whole world of pain.
So I've done very well, basically, have I?
Yeah.
You've done so early on.
Well, no, I found podcast hosts and people who've previously been on podcasts was a lot easier than trying to just get the people I wanted.
Okay. So 250-odd episodes in within 3 years, is that about right?
It's today 159 went live.
Okay.
And there's a few others, so it's probably pushing 200 now.
Did you ever think it would be as big as it has been and in growing every day as we speak?
At no point did I ever consider cancelling it, but there were times I thought it might be more of a labour of love than something that grew. But it has consistently grown. But when you're in a podcast group with people who are talking about yoga and healthy eating, and they launch their show and they get 5 figures basically by turning up, you get a bit disheartened in a while, and then you go, actually, no, sod it. All I care about is what I actually tell e-commerce business owners, which is stop looking at other people's benchmarks and just worry about your own. And when I started taking my own advice, the numbers side of it was lovely.
Okay, and specifically against what you now do, and obviously we'll come on to that in a short while, how has the podcast helped you build your business?
The actual tracking the numbers, very, very hard to say how the podcast has contributed to the bottom line. But in terms of content and industry awareness and perception and the anecdotal things I hear, it's had a huge impact. So I know there's quite a good correlation between the people who spend money with me and the number of podcast episodes they've listened to.
Okay.
Anecdotally, I haven't fully analysed it, you know. I haven't gone, right, so you want to hire me to do this, or you want to buy this course from me. You're not allowed to buy it until you tell me how many podcasts you listen to. But you know, there's definitely a correlation
there.
There's a trend.
There. Okay.
It's also brilliant for content. So my last but one book, pretty much every example in there was a podcast guest, because I had the content and I could talk about the numbers and the information without just seeing it from afar. I'd been behind the scenes with them, but in the public domain. Yeah. And it's also, the podcast is now the star of pretty much every talk I give as well. They're all, here's an example, hear more about it on the podcast, which I'm sure could get slightly annoying, but for those listening, so I try nowadays to just say at the beginning and the end, you can hear more about these people somewhere else.
So which came first for you? Obviously, E-commerce Master Plan is your brand.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, that's also the name of the podcast as well. But obviously, behind E-commerce Master Plan is the courses you do, the sort of education side of things. Which came first for you? Was it the podcast, or was it the sort of educational side for online retailers?
E-commerce Master Plan's been out for 6 years now, so it came first.
Okay.
And it was born out of my desire to help e-commerce business owners achieve their point of success faster. Because a lot of people just seem to be, I was coming across a lot of people who were doing something and completely missing the thing that was the most obvious for their business. So that's why I created the business, and that's kind of what everything I do at E-commerce Mastermind, everything the business delivers, is still focused on, is helping e-commerce business owners make better decisions. So not necessarily one-on-one going, why aren't you doing that?
Yeah.
But giving them the frameworks and the inspiration and the guidance to work it out for themselves. And then to be there if they've got questions and such.
Okay,
things.
Great. So what's your background then, prior to E-commerce Master Plan?
I started off my career, at Barclays Bank, but that was a miserable period of my life, so we're not going to dwell on that. Doing marketing there. That kind of got me the marketing bug, and then I got a job at Pastimes, which some of your listeners will remember, some of them won't, but it was a UK high street retailer with a big catalogue side and was very early adopter in the world of online commerce. So I joined them as the catalogue marketing manager, became the manager of customer relationships, I think was the title. So I was doing the catalogue mailings, the email marketing, other bits online, as well as the in-store loyalty cards.
Okay.
That went under, got into a consultancy who ran various elements of a number of about 6 or 7 mail order businesses. If anyone listens to a lot of my interviews, that number changes from interview to interview because I'm terrible at remembering exactly how many it was. It was somewhere between 6 and 10. Just to clarify that. I was head of e-commerce, taking mail order businesses who the catalogue would mail and the products might be accurate on the website within 2 weeks of the catalogue mailing.
How things have changed.
Yes. Oh, how things have changed indeed. So I got to the great joy of actually putting the products live at the right time and building new websites for them and sending, you know, the first email to lists of 60,000 people. It was an awesome time. And that, me and the guy from there, who was my boss there, we spun that out into a separate marketing agency, which I ran for just shy of 10 years and sold last year.
Wow. Okay.
Mm.
So let's talk about a little bit about E-commerce Master Plan and, mm-hmm. and sort of the stuff that you do. First and foremost, obviously you've written a number of books on the subject, and 5 books. I've actually got a list of them here. You've, not necessarily in order of writing, so apologies for this, but Customer Persuasion, and it's probably the book I want to dive into a little bit more today. E-commerce Marketing, E-commerce Master Plan 1.8, E-commerce Delivery, and then B2B E-commerce Master Plan.
Yep, that's them.
just out of interest, what's your favourite book of those five?
Oh, that's a horrible question. I'm asking someone which their favourite child is. I like all of them. E-commerce marketing has a special place in my heart because it sells more than any of the others.
That's a really good answer, yeah. Why not?
And also because I'm currently trying to work out how I'm going to rewrite it, because there's a rewrite of that one coming in the next 12 months, but I haven't quite yet decided what format that's going to take. Partly because I really love customer persuasion, because that's the one which I think gives the most to the reader. It's the heart. It's kind of hard to read because almost every page there's two or three ideas. So it's a notebook at the ready one. And then B2B e-commerce master plan is my most recent. And so that's got quite a special place in my heart as well. But they're all, don't worry, I'm not going to tell you why I love the other two, because I figure that might not be that interesting for the listeners. But they're all very special. And I get, you know, it doesn't matter how long they've been published for, I still get messages about all of them from people saying how much they value them. So,
which is why, presumably,
that's why
you did
I created them. Yeah, that's what it's about.
How's, obviously we've mentioned the podcast, but how have the books helped you build your business? Again, is it more of a credibility thing?
Again, it's quite a hard one to track what the impact is, but they have a more practical impact than the podcast does, because each of the books, people come to the website and they sign up for the free chapter trial of each book, and then each book has additional materials available online, so people come and sign up for that as well. So they have a big direct impact, yeah, on email list growth and on the financial of the business, which the podcast doesn't either. Mm. so they're a more trackable one, and they make working with clients a lot easier, because rather than the client have to pay me to tell them something that I've told a million other people, I can tell them just to read a chapter of the book, which means they've kind of got it recorded and they can keep going back to it. So they are very instrumental too.
Okay, great. We mentioned customer persuasion, and I just want to go into that, because I think there's a really interesting topic or concept that you put together in that. Mm-hmm. And I think I've heard you say before that you have a way of looking at relatively complex things and seeing it in a quite a simplistic, yeah, sort of step-by-step approach. I get the idea, this is what you've done here in customer persuasion. It's all about conversation, the customer, yes, conversation. And sort of within that, you call it the customer master plan.
Yes.
Taking it from sort of people searching for a product or a service through to, well, repeat and then regular customers. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just go over that concept briefly?
So it's e-commerce drilled down into six balls and five arrows. Yeah, six, yes, balls and five,
that's
arrows.
Right.
It's Monday morning. I'm slowly waking up here. So it's about, essentially, if you can get as many customers from the left-hand side to the right-hand side of the model as fast as possible, your business will grow and grow and grow. So the left-hand side goes from the world, that's the first customer relationship level, which is everybody out there in the world. Then in stage one, which is the arrow that links the first two circles, it's all about how you get people to your website. So the second circle is visitors. The third circle, these are the customer relationship levels, is then inquirers. Then we go first-time buyers, repeat buyers, and regular buyers. And that's the process somebody takes through your business. And once they've reached one of the circles, one of the customer relationship levels, they are there. And it's your job to find a way to move them up to the next one. So to move them from being an inquirer to being a first-time buyer, from being a visitor to becoming an inquirer, becoming a buyer, and so far through the journey. And there's different things you need to do with your marketing, with your business in general, your customer service, and with your website at each of those stages. And the book explains to you how to work out where your biggest problem is in terms of which stage between those circles you should be focusing on, because that's the real message, is stop trying to do everything, focus on your weakest point, fix that. And then each of the chapters about each stage is just packed with different ways you could fix the problem.
Yeah. So I'm a e-commerce retailer. I'm overwhelmed with all of the various different things I need to do. So where would I start? I've got, obviously, this, hopefully, a way of attracting customers to my website. Maybe I'm doing well with that, maybe I'm not doing well with that. But in terms of this specific concept, where do I start to try and really get a mastery of it and move through the different phases?
You start in chapter 9. Because chapter 9 is where there's the information on how to analyse where your business is, which does involve some maths. And once you've done that, you can then work out where your weakest and then go and work on that stage of the process. If you want the quick fire non-maths version, then take a sheet of paper, divide it in five, and write down which marketing you're using at each stage of the customer journey. So is all your marketing about getting people to your website? What are you doing in terms of turning inquirers into first-time buyers? What are you doing in terms of turning visitors into inquirers? In terms of turning first-time buyers into repeat buyers? And if you've got nothing in one of those boxes, that's probably also a good place to start. But obviously, the Chapter 9 financial method is better, but the quick and easy way, which actually, if you haven't done the quick and easy way, then you're probably not yet ready to move on to the numbers method anyway, is to go and look, is there one of these stages where we're not actually doing anything? It's probably a big old gap you need to fill.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of online retailers are in that overwhelmed. They really don't, you know, they're getting some success, obviously, because they'll have to have some to have a business. But they might just not know where to start. If someone comes to you and says, look, here's my business, this is what I'm achieving so far, where do I even begin to even look? I know, obviously, we said start chapter 9, but if someone just comes to you as a potential customer, how do you start that process with them? I'm sure you just don't say go and read chapter 9.
No, I don't.
Obviously, how do you start breaking down all of the overwhelm that they have as a retailer and start breaking things into manageable sections?
The first conversation is always really about trying to find out more about them and their business. And during the course of that conversation, I'll get a pretty good idea, partly because I'll ask them, but I get a pretty good idea about what the size of the business is and in terms of both turnover, getting in a bit into profit and cash flow, but also, and almost more importantly, about the team and what the abilities of the team and the likes of the team are, or even of the owner if it's a single person business. Once I've got an idea of that, then I can give them some options of how to go about solving the problems. For bigger retailers, that tends to be me doing a project to analyse, get into the numbers, because they've got the data there and because, you know, you should be looking at the data when it's a bigger business. For the smaller businesses, it's often a case of having a series of calls where they've got work to do in between times, or a core supporter with calls or something along those lines.
You mentioned data. Obviously, there's, in the book, there's quite a lot of sources of that data.
Yes.
Do you want to just sort of mention a few that you recommend to start? There's all very clever analytics and all that sort of stuff out there now, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of very clever things out there, but a lot of them are bright, shiny objects, which is one of my hated things, bright, shiny objects. These are the things which arrive in your inbox and distract you completely from what you're supposed to be doing. And a lot of the, oh, look, I can find this out. You know, if you've ever spent a whole day in Google Analytics finding very interesting things but nothing you can action, you've been taken in by bright, shiny objects. So my number one most favourite report of all time, year after year after year, is the Source Medium report that's in Google Analytics. From memory, you go to acquisition, traffic, and then there's an option called Source/Medium. And that takes you down to the granular data that hasn't been fudged by Google. It's the cold, hard data of where your traffic comes from and what it does when it comes to your website. Because if I had a pound for every time I've been asked, my conversion rate's X, is this good? I'd be a lot wealthier than I am now. that's the answer to that question is one of the questions I wish I kind of had a tape recorder just to go ding, and I'll play you back what the answer is. But the reason being that your overall conversion rate is a useful stat to be looking at week on week and month on month within your own business. It's a completely pointless stat to compare against somebody else, because you don't know what they're doing to get the traffic and what they're doing to get the conversions, because it relates to both the traffic and the conversions. So take it to the Source Medium report, and if on there I can see that you've got great conversion rate off your emails, the terrible conversion rate off your direct traffic, then I know you have got a problem, and therefore we need to go in and dive into what that problem is. But you know, you can see more of the data, more of the details, and you can also see where the traffic problems are as well.
You've just mentioned email. I'm sure a lot of people are like, email's dead, everyone just gets their inbox full of junk and they ignore everything now. That's not necessarily the case, is it?
No, email remains huge. I mean, I'm more than happy for someone to come and show me the stats that email is dead for them, that's fine, but you have to test it first. You've got to give it a good try, because the number of businesses I see that are making huge sums of money through using their email database wisely is just insane. And there's a company in the States called Castora who produce kind of like a grouped together set of data on lots and lots and lots of e-commerce businesses and where the money comes from. For them, email remains about 25% contributor to sales. So 25% of sales on e-commerce websites driven by email. So ignore it at your peril.
Other sort of forms that you mentioned, and I think things change very quickly in e-commerce, don't they? And that's, I guess, obviously that's why you're looking at revising some of your books, because some of that, not necessarily outdated, but there's newer stuff that you may want to add.
Yeah.
How do you see sort of, again, I think going back to a lot of sort of the overwhelm side of things, people might go, well, I've got to look at email, I've got to look at live chat, I've got to look at my Google Analytics, I've got to look at my Facebook Analytics, all these things, and they just don't know where to start. But the other sort of the newer methods of building relationships and attracting customers, obviously things like there's live chat, there's influencers, obviously review sites you go into a little bit on in your book as well. And then other sort of mediums like podcasts for one, TV, radio. When you're speaking to a retailer and they, you know, they've heard about, potentially they're seeing this as a shiny object, like you talk about, what do you do when they say, oh, I need to start getting with the influencers, I need to start looking at live chat, I need to start looking at the review sites, when they haven't got some of the basics right?
Well, it's a tricky one, because sometimes it can be such an obvious thing to do that it's worth ignoring the basics for another couple of weeks and seeing if you can get the traction there. Because for some businesses, it's the green light. You know, influencers in particular can be the green light. Approach for everybody, it's more the case of looking at your numbers, looking at what you know, looking at what you can see competitors are doing, and think, what is the number one thing I could be doing right now to be improving my business? And if it is building an email welcome campaign, then that's what you should be doing. But if it's installing live chat to improve the sales process because you're finding lots of people are asking questions, then if you're on a standardized platform, you know, a Shopify or a Magento or something, or a BigCommerce, Volusion and all the rest of it, you can put live chat live in about half an hour. You know, by the end of the day, you'll know whether it was worth installing or not.
You just need the people at the other end to be able to be there to action it quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And having been testing live chat myself, finally, recently, my ability to leave live chat up and forget about it and go make a cup of coffee for 10 minutes is terrible. So that's one to watch out for.
You really need to see a customer service team.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know,
yeah,
they may be the traditionally answering phone calls and things like that. But
I've actually just taken it off one of my sites because I thought the various pop-ups were coming up and it was all looking a bit too busy. And I thought, right, live chat, I keep forgetting to say I'm available. So it's never got an available person on it anyway, which is not good. And then when I do turn it on, I have a bad habit of forgetting about it. So until I've got a VA who can look after it for me, I thought, let's just remove it for now.
One of the things you do in the book is obviously you give examples throughout the chapters of businesses maybe you've worked with or you've certainly interviewed and had dealings with. When obviously you talked about influencers and things like that, the one business that I'm very fond of at the moment and very much a fan of what they've achieved is Gymshark, and I know you've featured them in some of the stuff you've done. I just think what they've achieved in the last few years is absolutely incredible, and a lot of it is down to influencers. And something else I want to talk about is the sort of communities that they build. Now, so going back to influence, what's sort of your take on the meteoric growth of Gymshark?
I think the Gymshark example is a great one to inspire us and to move us onwards. The ability to replicate it is very, very hard. There's a certain level of luck and being in the right time at the right place and doing the right things, which is actually the sort of thing which anyone can manage to achieve if they make the right decisions at the right time. But yeah, quite a challenging one. And I think also, the other thing to take from it is, yes, they did very well on influencers, but they worked really hard at it. You know, influencer marketing is not, it's like affiliate marketing, it's not something to be turned on and forgotten about. It's a daily workload. It's something which you are constantly working on, constantly building relationships. And often, relationship building is not something that fits with the rest of e-commerce. in that one-on-one relationship building, certainly isn't. Usually we're automating it. And if you want to work with influencers, that's a one-on-one relationship building piece. Not so much more like B2B sales than consumer e-commerce marketing.
Interesting. Last week, in fact, we were talking to another e-commerce business completely unrelated to anything that we're talking about. But they were talking about they're using influencers. They've got quite a niche market about what they do. I won't go into obviously the details, but there are influencers against that niche, of course. And they've tried to replicate that influencer with their own YouTube marketing and stuff like that, and it's completely bombed. No engagement, yet the influencer is getting a huge amount of engagement, huge amount of interaction. And it's just the fact that people see through that, don't they? Yeah. An influencer has to be independent to the brand for it to be authentic.
I don't know if it has to be completely independent, but it needs to be honest. And I think it's rare that someone brand side, someone working in an e-commerce business, has the same credentials, skills, ability that it takes to make an influencer. You know, it's much more of a reactive, creative, not that e-commerce isn't creative, but it's a very different way of working than sitting down and, you know, certainly the beginning, and sitting down and going, right, these are the topics we need to cover over the next 12 months. It's more of a wake up on a Monday morning and go, oh my God, I've got to tell my audience about that. It's that sort of thing. So it's, it can be tricky. If I was them, I'd have gone for a big old sponsorship package instead, you know?
Yeah. I've mentioned communities, and I think giving the Gymshark example is a great example of how they've really got this very loyal following of customers, and hence why they're doing so well. You talk about it in your book.
Yeah.
How does someone go about building a community from scratch, effectively?
Well, there's a couple of ways that work quite nicely in e-commerce. One is a community who know about each other, and one is a community who don't have contact with each other. So the latter is literally about just designating your top 5% of customers as VIPs and just treating them a bit differently. So they feel like they're part of something, even though they don't know who the other club members are. So to give them, you know, special free PMP weekends, or to, you know, to send them an email going, we're thinking of going with this color or this color for this lamp. What do you think?
Get
them involved in the decision-making process of the business. Send them samples to test and that sort of thing. That's a brilliant way of creating that community feel without it being too hard to manage. Because I do say to a lot of businesses, my God, you really ought to have a customer community. Let's create a Facebook group, invite them in, because this is the other way. Very, very simple way. Create a Facebook group, get them all in there, get them chatting, and do the same, what do you think, this product or this product, competitions and so forth. That scares the pants off most people I suggest it to. Can't have our customers talking to each other.
I'll talk about pricing.
What if they share our competitor offer in there? What if they start complaining in there and then they all jump together? And so that, I understand, is quite a scary move. So to take the, here's our top 10%, and we'll treat them the same as we would if there was a Facebook group, but we'll see how they react as a baby step towards the Facebook group. However, I would say kind of man up and try out the Facebook group, because they're a lot of fun and they have a lot more cut through in the Google algorithm. Okay. Not the Google algorithm, the Facebook algorithm than does a page.
Well, there's a lot of changes across Facebook recently, and I've seen a lot of sort of business related people moaning about that they're just not getting the reach that they used to. I think about a third or something like that, some people are quoting. So that's quite a significant decrease, isn't it?
It's a huge decrease, but it was kind of inevitable.
Slight change of direction, I guess. One of the things, obviously, we talk about with e-commerce, it's ever-changing. It's every day there's something new, every day there's something slightly different. How do you, how do you keep up with it? Because obviously you're then advising other businesses.
Yep.
But how do you advise businesses to keep on top of this ever-changing e-commerce monster that we're all part of?
Yeah, I think this might be heresy to say this, but I don't think it changes that much. I think a lot of bright, shiny objects come along, and a lot of marketing agencies decide this, or a lot of software agencies decide this is the best thing in the world. Like Facebook Messenger bots at the moment, just everybody wants to talk about bots. Then I get more inbound requests of people wanting to be on my podcast to talk about bots than to talk about anything else.
Are you not a fan?
I don't mind a bot. Okay. I don't have anything against a bot. I think there's some really, really clever bots out there. But they're not. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not something that every business should have in place. It's not something which even every business that should have it in place is ready to put it in place. Because, you know, you've got to know what you want the bot to do and say. And if you've not been running any kind of live chat or interactive chat in the meantime, you're probably clueless. So I think there's, you know, and fundamentally a bot system is just, it's just another way of communicating with customers. So I think there's, occasionally there's new tools coming along, but for me the fundamentals don't actually change. It's about getting your business in front of the people who want your product and then building a relationship with them via whatever channels are the right ones for you in order to keep them buying from you.
Yeah, which is obviously so, part of that, the master plan that you talk about in the book.
So I suppose you said, what would my advice be to anyone who's trying to stay on top of it all? It would be try not to get overwhelmed by all the things you're hearing and try and just focus on what your business needs and keep an eye on what your competitors are up to.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't get too worried about all the newness. You know, I go to all the biggest events in the UK, the biggest conferences. I listen to the biggest retailers and a lot of smaller retailers. There's nothing that remarkable come out in the last 12 months, last 24 months. It's why e-commerce marketing, the rewrite of the book is quite a tricky one to do, because actually the current book is still 100% accurate and it's 6 years old, the content in that. So it's how to, you know, how do I, if I'm going to rewrite it, I've got to make it even better. So how do I do that? Because actually the existing content is right, because you still approach all these things in the same way.
Yeah. Okay. One of the things you talk about, and it just sort of sparked something for me, is that I've just read a book by Seth Godin called All Marketeers Are Liars. It's quite obviously a thought-provoking headline or a controversial headline. It's meant to be, that's his point. But you talk about an ethical approach in customer persuasion. And so does Seth, so he's not saying don't do it. But what he does go into, and I think this is really interesting, I like your take on it really, is that a lot of marketing is based on probably more of a fib than anything else. But as long as the marketeers sort of run with it, people obviously believe it. They he calls it their worldview. It's what people sort of want to believe in some ways.
Yeah.
He gives examples. For example, designer clothing. You know, a £150 shirt is better than a £20 shirt because it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's a bit of a lie, isn't it? It's the marketing behind it that persuades you to believe that the £150 shirt is better than the £20 shirt. So I think it's a really interesting book. And when you talk about the ethics, that reminded me of Seth's book. And I just wondering, what have you got a take on that?
See, that I don't, you know, the value versus the brand, you know, if they are, you know, if we say these two shirts are exactly the same quality and one has a logo on, one is made, doesn't even have a logo on, but it's made by somebody different and you're buying into that. I think it's wrong to think that we as humans make buying decisions based on purely logical things, or that we want to make buying decisions based on purely logical scenarios. And if we want to feel like we're part of the tribe that brand creates, then actually what we want and what we're paying are in line with each other. So I can see why he's saying those are things are lies, but I don't think that's being unethical, because I think the human being making the buying decision has the choice.
For me, the
unethical bit is where you're claiming to be something you aren't.
Yeah, he talks about fib versus fraud. And obviously, he was saying that the fib is actually okay to a certain extent. He promotes ethical stance, of course, but he's saying a lot of marketeers work on the fib more than anything. But we are very cynical as a buying sort of consumer, so to speak. Yeah. So the fraud bit will always be found out. So, but it's the fib bit that I thought was interesting, because it's not truthful, but it's not fraudulent. So there's a real fine line between the two.
Yes, I very much try and be as true and honest as I always can be. But, God, I can't believe I'm about to admit this on a podcast that anybody can listen to. So I often, because I have people who follow me all over the world, if I'm running a promotion that ends at midnight on Friday, the technical cutoff date for that is usually going to be at some point on Saturday. Because I'm like, well, I'm going to tell you that's the endpoint because that's the urgency, and that will be the correct endpoint for some people. But if you're in the wrong time zone, it's going to be different. And I don't want it to be the case that someone reads midnight on Friday, hasn't seen the caveat that this only counts for XYZ time zone, so it carries on over. Likewise, you know, I sent an email out a couple of weeks ago because I was giving away one of my books for free on Kindle. And the Amazon setup page for when you're... This was genius. Oh, no, it was awful, but it's nice to see Amazon get something wrong occasionally. The instructions suggested you had to set it up for starts on Monday, ends on Wednesday, if you wanted it to run on Tuesday. Down at the bottom, it said how many days you've covered. So the information at the top said that was the correct setup for one day. The information at the bottom said that was the correct setup for 2 days.
Okay.
So I'm like, well...
Which is it?
Well, yeah, which is it? Because if I change it to match the top, then that's going to be 0 days. So I'm like, yeah, well, we'll go with two. And I'm sure no one's going to mind if I've told them it's only available for 1 day and it happens to be available for two. So I guess I knowingly fib at times, but I try and do it to give the best possible customer service. And I think you kind of have to do that if you don't want to annoy people by them missing out.
It's also trying to keep things simple, like you said about time zones. You don't want to start having to say, oh, by the way, if you're in this time zone, that actually means it's this time of the UK time. It just gets too complicated.
Yes, time zones are a bugbear of my life, generally.
just on that very point, how much of your business then is sort of non-UK based?
The majority, probably 80% is UK based, but I get quite a lot of... I mean, podcast listenership is about 45% US, about 10% Australia. When it comes to book sales, they are truly global. In terms of the courses and the work that I actually do with people, that's almost entirely UK based, with a smattering of Europe and the occasional American or Australian. It's tricky. I'm forever doing global stuff, but most of my work's in the UK.
Okay, just finally to wrap up, if people want to hear you speak, I know you're quite busy with conferences and things like that.
Yeah.
Where's your next sort of speaking engagement?
My next speaking... Well, that's a big question for a Monday morning. Where am I speaking next? My next speaking engagement is the Direct Commerce Association's annual summit at the beautiful Hurlingham Gardens in London. If you're coming by public transport and you're a lady, well, and you might be a man as well, and you're probably wearing high heels for the day, bring a pair of flip-flops because it's a really long walk from the tube station. Inside knowledge there. I'm speaking there on the subject of affiliate marketing and influencer marketing, in fact, and that's in June. And details are on the Direct Commerce Association site. And then I'm doing a whole workshop for them on Digital Marketing 101 in St. Austell in Cornwall. So super easy one for me to get to. No overnight stay required. That will be at some point in, I think it's either early July, I think that one is. But that's certainly this side of the summer.
Do you get to travel a lot now then, based on everything?
Yeah, I was nearly in Oslo this week, but they found someone else to do the slot. So hopefully I'll be in Oslo later this year. I should have been in Greece earlier this year, but the snow got in the way of that. So I'm mainly UK at the moment, but all over the UK, yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, finally, if someone wants to get in contact with you, I think this is going to be a very easy question to answer.
Yep.
If people want to get in contact with you, they're interested in either, obviously your books are all on Amazon, but if they want to get in contact, you speak to you about a particular thing in their business, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Just head to ecommercemasterplan.com. You will find all the details there, hopefully easily signposted. If you can't find them, tell me and I know my UX needs improving. But ecommercemasterplan.com, you will find all my contact details and links to everything else we talked about today, actually.
And obviously the podcast is available
on
iTunes.
It's on everything.
Yeah, so it depends how they consume podcasts, you'll find it under
ecommercemasterplan. It's there.
Thank you very much for today. It's been a pleasure.
No, thank you. I've really enjoyed chatting with you. It's been very cool. It's been very cool to do it face to face as well. You are officially my first face to face podcast interview.
Oh, I'm pleased.
On either side of the mic. So this is very cool.
Absolute pleasure for me today. So thank you very much.
Thank you.